Yeah, Jim.
Can I get on the stack as Baruti?
Please. Baruti.
I was second. Somebody else, I think, spoke.
Jamie would also like to be on the stack.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jamie. I couldn't hear your voice. Jamie and Baruti.
Okay, my question is this 19.5% number correct? Because my understanding, looking at the income statements for BAI, that we pay 20% of listener support is our central services allocation. Is this 19.5% up to date?
Yes, it is, actually, even though we budgeted at 20. When I checked the record for the last 5, 6, 7 years, somewhere back in those years, there was an agreement, I guess, to pay the stations back in some way. And it's, in fact, been 19.5%. Some years even less when, for some reason, I can't even figure out, like it goes down to 15, 16%. But the budgeting has been at 20%, but that doesn't hurt you because you pick up the extra 0.5%. As goes to your bottom line, but that is the actual 19.5, and it's been uniform. I was checking with some people saying, why is it 19.5? And they said there was an understanding and an agreement that there would be some way in which the stations were paid back. So we've continued to 19.5.
Huh, that's kind of odd. Okay.
Can I get on the stack, please? This is Evan.
Does anybody know for sure?
Is there an answer?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought maybe somebody could remember back then and tell me, but I've not changed it to 20. I left it at 19.5, saving the stations that money.
So the action here is just to confirm it is 19.5 and not 20. Is that correct?
It is. And you can check with your business managers. They know.
So you'll be billing and budgeting based on 19.5 from now on?
Right now I got you at 20, but you'll be billing at 19.5. That's sort of what we've been doing.
And you'll be budgeting for FY08 with 19.5?
Well, yeah, I can do that, not a problem. But I think I still don't know why it's that way. That's what I was hoping to get clear. I don't know why everybody's being at 19. I know, of course, why K is. But I don't know why that practice started. And it started beyond, the books sort of, fall apart in 01 and 02 and 00 because that was that period of turmoil that people weren't keeping their books. And then when you come out on the other side of it, these new practices were in place and the motions and the documents and the records don't explain why. I'm still wanting to know.
Okay. Baruti's next, but just I want to make one quick comment that we can always make it 16, but Baruti.
That'll fall back.
It was the sentence that says monthly central allocations to stations are based on a net allocation of 19.5% of listener support. That just sounds a little, because initially I thought they were saying expenses are allocated to stations, but it's really station revenue is allocated to national office. So it just seems like this could be worded a little bit better because nothing is really allocated to the station. It's station revenue is being allocated to or being there's an assessment being made on station revenue to support the national office.
It should say based on listener support revenue. That would be more accurate.
Yeah, because it's saying monthly central allocations to station are based on net allocations of 19.5% of listener support. Because you don't allocate expenses to us, what's happening is that our revenue is allocated to national, right? There's no allocation to stations, basically. That's what I'm saying, if you see what I'm...
So services is 19.5% of listener support or listener revenue. And, of course, that is going to include two or three items. So it is based on that revenue figure. That is, Central Administrative Services represents an allocation based on listener support. Revenue from each radio station, and it's the revenue, and so the expense is derived as from 19.5% of that listener support revenue fee, and that's how Pacifica does it.
Okay, so can we take another action on this one? This is just to clear up the maybe
sure.
Baruti, you can suggest that the language that makes it clear to you. Because I see the point you're making in terms of
I won't hold it
crisp.
Up.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you take an action? And then
can we just? I know what we're trying to get to. Maybe when we get into committee, I could draft up something for everybody to look at and see if they kind of if they're in agreement with it. But I just think it could be worded a little bit differently.
Yeah, I'm using based on listener support revenue from each radio station. That's the language I
right.
heard it.
Terry?
Terry.
I clarify it even more to work on
okay.
it.
Thank
yeah,
you,
but
Terry.
I also asked
I'm sorry. Evelyn. Evelyn,
yeah.
I heard you.
Okay.
Yeah, Evelyn,
thank
then
you.
Terry.
So this is actually a billing from the foundation to each station, correct?
Yes, yeah.
For services.
Yeah.
Why don't we just say that? So that it's clear.
What's your language?
That it's a monthly billing for central allocations to stations based on 19.5% of listener support.
I'm going to make a note, Evelyn, with that monthly billing concept.
And then we can work it out, I guess, in committee.
Okay, because you want to make sure that if we all drop dead, the next person that reads this will understand what we were trying to do. They
yeah.
understand billing. They get them every month.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Point.
Terry?
Yeah, I think the confusion is because the immediately preceding sentence uses the word allocation with respect to revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But this sentence uses allocation with respect to debt.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the sentence needs to be recrafted so that the allocation is of revenue. And so the allocation is to the national office of the revenue from stations.
Right. An expense is computed based on and billed based on monthly listener support revenue. A little bit, but that's the way it really is. Okay.
Okay. So this is LaVorne. Just do we have it somewhere clarified, or maybe I'll miss that? Okay. Listener support. Okay, it's in the introduction. Listener support pledges and donations. So is that clear in terms of what listener support revenue is in this definition? Do we need to clarify that, or is it? It goes back to the definition at the beginning of if that's in the introduction.
Yeah.
This is Jamie.
Yes, Jamie.
I would appreciate a more clear definition of what listener support is. You know, this is a question we constantly have in our own local finance committee. If in my recollection, last year, in our last calendar year at BAI, we thought we were paying so much in listener support, and then we had some other monies that got paid in some other categories that didn't get levied for the national, for essential services. And then there was a recategorization of some of that revenue into the, quote, listener support, unquote, line, so it did get levied, and then the station actually had less money than it thought it did. And, you know, there's never really been, at least from my vantage point, a total clarity on what exactly is listener support. So whether it needs to be in this document or not, I don't know about that, but there is an issue about what is listener support, and that lack of clarity has negatively affected financial matters, at least at WBAI, in the past. Thanks.
Don White.
Yes, Don.
Brian later.
And Brian.
Yeah, again, I may be confused here, but I do want to just pose this question. We're only talking now about the five stations, I believe, but my question has to do with the affiliates program, which is a revenue-generating program. I think it brings in, I don't know, $200,000 a year or so on, and most of that money goes to the foundation. Now, at the rate it's taken by the foundation, it would be the equivalent to about 40% of the revenue. So, Lonnie, my question to you is, this is not a formula that applies to, for instance, the affiliates program, right?
No.
The affiliates program is not charged central services.
And no, but it does have a huge percentage of its revenue taken. So what is that called? And then I'll stop this line of questioning. What is it called? Is it just a what is it called when the national office takes, 40% or more of the affiliates program's generated revenue for central services? What is that called? Just an assessment?
That's not accurate. We don't take any of the really it's revenue for central services, as I was saying.
Okay, can I just go ahead, Lonnie? I'm sorry, Ed.
Yeah, we don't do that. They're part of the national office, and therefore they're not levied central services in the sense that maybe somebody might suggest that we do, but we haven't historically, and as far as I look back in these books, it's never been done that way.
Okay, so it's just part of the national office, so its revenue is okay, that's fine. Go ahead, Laverne.
Okay. Oh, no, that's fine. I thought that I was just trying to make it a short explanation, so no, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, okay. I know some of us who are on the affiliates task force are surprised that more of the revenue generated by the affiliates program isn't pumped back into, you know, development outreach and development of new affiliates and so on. But that's a totally different discussion, so I'm going to just drop it.
Okay, Brian.
Going over the list of national. I just got the new version. Thank you.
Sure, you're welcome.
So they're no longer listed as national units, but the things that consist of central administrative services, National Office, Democracy Now!, Pacifica Radio Archives, and Free Speech Radio. Do you mean Free Speech Radio News?
Yes.
Okay. When I look at the consolidated income statements, all the money for Free Speech Radio News is billed directly to the stations. None of it comes out of the National Office budget. So that's a confusing statement to me.
Well, I'm not understanding your point.
We pay a 20% levy to the National Office, and I understand one of the things we get for that levy is Democracy Now!. But we pay a separate $155,000 as a separate line to Free Speech Radio, for Free Speech Radio News.
Free Speech Radio News, unlike Democracy Now!, is funded through the CPB grant, and the CPB grant requires that... believe it or not, it requires that those funds, those expenses, be shown in the station budget. However, we just pay it directly out of the national office. So stations don't actually pay the Free Speech Radio News levy. We pay it out of the national office, even though the budget sits in each station's budget. But they don't actually write checks for that. So it comes out of the CPB grant.
But we get billed back for it.
Yeah, but that's part of a grant, the CPB grant. So the monies are coming from that source.
You're talking about the 22.5% in the CPB grant that's allocated to national program production and acquisition?
Yes, the 27.5%. Yes.
Well, you are now billing us back in excess of 22.5%. And as I understand it, the spending on Democracy Now! Would fulfill that requirement just as easily as Free Speech Radio News would.
That's not clear. The history has been, at least since I've been here, is that the Free Speech Radio News folks have been designated to satisfy the CPB requirement for national programming, and they have been receiving those funds. Democracy Now! Does not come from the CPB grant. These are funds we raise, of course, outside of that process.
Well, regardless, the point is it seems wrong to list Free Speech Radio News as something that's supplied as part of Central Administrative Services when it's being billed to the station separately from Central Services. I hope you take my point on that.
Well, I'm not clear.
We pay 20% of Central Services. On top of that, we pay a separate speech for Free Speech Radio News. In this manual, you have a section that purports to explain in detail what Central Service pays for. It says it pays for Free Speech Radio News.
Oh, yeah, I see
your
point.
In fact, that money is coming from somewhere else.
Yeah, I see your point. That can be confusing. But they're not part of the Central Service allocation. We get it through a grant process. So maybe what we can do is clarify that a little bit. But this, I took it to mean who's in the Central Administrative Services. And Free Speech Radio News is considered part of a service that is, in this case, funded by CPB to the stations. That is to say, programming that's paid for by that. But it is different. You're right. It is different, and we should try to clarify that. But it's, you know, neither is Democracy Now! you know. So it's a little hard to try to capture all the nuances in one sentence.
LaVon, this is Jamie.
Can I get it back on?
Jamie,
can I get on the stack?
I have a point of privilege.
Who's Jamie?
Yeah, I need to get off the call now. So thank you all.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you very much. And you and Terry will get together on the notes, on the minutes. Okay, thank you. Thank you for staying on this long. Who is next?
Can I get on the stack?
I'm sorry.
LaVon Baruti.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear.
Yeah, I wanted to just echo what Jamie said about getting clarification on listener support pledges and so forth. And I think, you know, in the other paragraph, it can refer back to you know, listener support as explained in the introduction or something to that effect. But I think we need to I mean, it's not something we probably can work out tonight, but we need to expand on that because, like I said, there's still at BAI some discussion that listener support, at least as it relates to what central services is assessed on, does not include pledges above a certain amount for which the donor does not receive a premium. So we need to expand on that listener support definition at some point.
Well,
in the first paragraph.
Well, no.
Lonnie?
We're clear on that. We've been
clear. Okay.
But we need it defined here. We need to see the definition here.
I can define it for you very easily.
I mean, I mean, you can do it, yeah. But I think we need it somehow in this document because otherwise, as Evelyn says, you know, the next person come on and said, oh, you know, where did that come from? But again, how do you define it?
Right. Yeah. What's not in listener support? Everything's in listener support except for, as I think we went over before, I'm taking it from the revenue category. Everything is listed as support except for community offense income, in this case, craft fair income from KPFA. Grant income is not included. And, of course, CPB is not included. And non-operating grants. Everything else here, of course, sales income, PRE is not included. Less rental income is not included. No as affiliates. But everything else is in central service. That would be listed support, all donations, corporate match, website income, and those are the major categories that would go in the listener support.
And what happened? Can I ask a quick question?
What
about suppose
the listener? Yes, this is interesting.
Suppose a listener donates stock to a station.
Yeah, that would be considered a pledge of stock or actual gift of stock, a donation or contribution as part of listener support. Now, it says they donated you.
So now listen to that, Lonnie. Listen, so we have to give up 19.5% on money that we don't even control.
Let me finish the thought.
Okay.
Let's say somebody gives you a house and it's worth $350,000 and you cash it in. And this is why the investment thing has a role here. If you were to take that $350,000 proceeds and put it in the investment account, there is no central service charge on it. It's only charged as a part of central services when you put it in your budget and plan to spend those funds. Otherwise, it just sits there. There's no central service charge on that gift. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Only when you plan to expand or use the funds in the current operating budget does central service apply to these things. So if a listener gives you a check for $1 million and you put it in the investment account, there is no listener support. There's no charge. There's no listener support allocation for that money. Only when you plan to use it in an operating budget. And then that would go through the process where the finance committee would look at your planned use of that $1 million, and the board would look at your planned use of that $1 million and okay it through our normal processes. They may say, no, we can't spend $1 million on outreach, and in which case the funds will remain in, say, the investment account where there is no central service charge.
Okay,
so I think, again, in terms of this is LaVarne. In terms of what the process was in the past, or you know, as we know, there's no CPB does not define listener income. So that was a device used in order to allocate, or in order to not to allocate, in order to for the stations to actually support the national office, and that there was a certain definition of how we did that, and it seemed to have all of a sudden changed, Lonnie, so that everything included major donations and listener support. So, you know, I think that this is something we still that, you know, I think at the PNB meeting in July in LA, in our finance and operations, that I think that's one of the topics we need to discuss. And I think we do need to go back and look at the history and see how this has evolved from, you know, major donations, not being listener support, and not being charged for not giving funds or helping the national office by on major donations and only on what we thought was like on-air fundraising and listener support, and then at a certain level. So again, please, I'd like to add this to the agenda when we meet in with operations in July in LA. So is there someone else that we need to move forward on this?
By the way, I'll ask the auditor to come and explain sort of it's not arbitrary. CDP does define listener support revenue, and that's what the auditor does when he comes. He takes the money no matter where stations have booked it and put it. He does the audit based on CPC regs. So let him come and explain it. He will do it.
Which is wonderful. Again, we're just what we need to do is just look at the history and see how this has changed, because all of us believe that it has changed, Lonnie. And that, you know, and we just need to be part of this decision to change it, because, again, like you said, okay, in terms of definition by CPB, the decision is how do we support the national office and what is the percentage? So I think that and what is the basis for it and how this has evolved. So I think we just need to put it on the table, you know, get the history, you know, get Mr. Wisdom's input on that and
okay.
Then we can move forward.
You're talking about the rate. Okay, I was talking about the categorization. Okay.
Not a category. No, I'm talking about no. We don't need to do it. I think that Ross explained that very well when we were in January, Houston. How can I not forget? Okay. Are there any other questions? So, but we have a number of actions on this. I think Terry, you have those in terms of clarifying. We need to list in the national office that wasn't clear. We need to define listener support. Again, the question is like really defining, you know, who is part of national office and who we're supporting. Or is there any other action that we had in there? It's just clarifying the language. I think Baruti was going to do a draft, and Evelyn had mentioned that put in billing instead of allocation as we transfer money from the stations to the national office.
Yeah, I got the note on that, too.
Okay. Anything else? Shall we move? The next is cash receipts policy. Now, what I'm going to ask is that since I'm just kind of going through this and I have the revised sheet, if anyone on the audit committee has any information or anything, you know, pertinent to this, you know, just jump right in as I go through it. That would be great. So on the cash receipts policy, would someone please read it, because I'm going to lose my voice if I try to read.
Terry can read it.
Please.
Cash receipts policy. MIMSIS managers at each station shall record all receipts in the MIMSIS system daily. A report is to be generated on all receipts and forwarded to the business manager and will include a copy of the check and deposit slip. A log shall be maintained and given to the general manager weekly. Each station's development director reviews the process and certifies the receipts for presentation to the general manager. The cash receipts log must have two signatures, the unit manager and unit business manager. All funds should be deposited within 24 hours of receipt. A reconciliation of MIMSIS and the account system must be done by the business manager and the controller monthly. All reconciliations must be resolved and adjustments made in the appropriate database within 30 days. And then there's some red and blue type. And,
Could you go ahead and read those?
Okay. And also a pop-up window. in bracketed is, who is the MIMSIS manager at each station? I need to correct and clarify who actually does each of these functions. Also applies to procedures section below. That's from Carol Wolf. In blue, from Lonnie Hicks, the MIMSIS people are not currently part of the finance union. We do, however, need to work on this relationship.
Okay. Questions? Or do we want to go into the procedures detail? That's general. Okay. Now, if we can go ahead. because, again, the procedures detail has the general, and then it has, okay, so here's where you have the more detailed information. Okay, did I hear someone's voice?
It was Nia.
Uh-huh.
I was going to proceed.
Proceed to procedures?
General
procedures? Number
yes.
One. All mail is opened by the MemSys manager and the development manager at each station or unit daily. Checks and cash are recorded in the cash receipts log. See attachment. Carol Wolf asks, does this mean that all mail is opened by two people together for check verification? Again, need to clarify titles. Do any stations have a MemSys manager? And Lonnie answers, yes, more or less. Should I stop there?
Are there questions? Or continue until we hear questions.
I just have a comment.
Please.
But Terry, may I, LeVar?
Yes, please, Nia.
You recognize Terry?
Yes.
You don't have to read the pop-up windows. I just don't want anybody to feel slighted because there were three other members that were on that working group, just that Carol did. Carol was a scribe, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Two.
Okay.
The log includes the date received, the check number, the remitter, the amount, and the general ledger code. Three, copies of the checks and records of the cash receipts are attached to the daily log sheet. Four, deposit slips are completed for the amounts collected each day for the appropriate bank accounts and submitted to the general manager for review. There's a question as to whether that should be business manager rather than general manager. The answer is that the business manager, general manager, is the proper person. Five, the development manager compares the deposit slips to the daily cash receipts log to ensure the amounts agree. Six, the general manager then signs off on the deposit slip and returns it to the business manager for deposit.
Can I be recognized, please? Nia?
Please. Nia?
Lonnie?
Yeah.
Now, number six, is that what really happens, that the general manager signs off on deposit slips?
Well, one of the reasons we're proposing this kind of language is it's a little bit haphazard right now. So we're part of these procedures is not just to describe what is. Sometimes what is a little bit chaotic, but to establish what the policies and procedures should be. The general managers, some of them do, some of them don't. But proper accounting is that you want to have separation of those who receive money and those who write checks. You want to have a separation of those who open envelopes and those who log the contents of those envelopes so that you have a check and balance, and not only in this kind of case. Remember, you're talking millions of dollars here. And so you have to have a procedure, and our auditor will probably give us a more hint about what we can do. Sometimes you don't have business manager. The fund development person is doing both roles. But this is the attempt to try to establish some kind of rules.
Carol Wolf on the stack. Carol. If we could go back to number one, it's actually germane to what Lonnie just said under procedures. Could we add to the procedures that each station submits a list of the titles that does these functions? Feeling like the yes, more or less, doesn't really answer the question. And if we are trying to standardize procedures, I think we probably need the actual titles of the people who do these things at the different stations.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe we could all just establish how it's currently being done and who's doing it.
Or
go ahead.
That line. Carol? Lonnie, maybe the national office could ask the general managers just to send that directly to you.
We could do it that way, Carol, but, it's even nice to have someone there at that station who can verify whatever the general manager sent me because I'm not there.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay. The other action is that you're still going to convene a finance committee meeting like you did for the last PNB meeting, Lonnie? Is that the question?
Yeah, we'll be able to ask people directly.
Okay, so can you ask at that time?
Yeah, we can clarify actual practice at that meeting, and I don't know, it's about a month away. So we will be able to verify some of this stuff with the folks that are actually doing the work.
Okay, so for the finance meeting, this teleconference before the PNB meeting, that will be, so that's one of the actions for that meeting, is to get the names and the title of the individuals that are doing this at this point in the station.
Yeah, this is critical. You're talking about millions of dollars going through a process where people are opening checks and depositing cash, so it is critical.
Mm-hmm. And can we also get this for the national office?
Yeah, we have our procedures in place already. Yes,
okay, so we'll do it. Okay. Okay, is there anyone else? Okay, shall we move on?
I have another question, LaVar.
Sure, please, Nia.
Who's the development manager? Who's the development manager? That's the development director, but who? I'm not familiar with that title.
Yeah, development. Sometimes they call fund development manager, or sometimes they call development manager, but that's another, you know, issue of clarifying titles and uniformalizing them.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay, so the action then is that the title, as you said, is to get the title and the person at each station?
Yeah.
Okay, so do we want to move forward, stock donations? Terry, can you? Can I just do a little check with everyone? The time now is almost 7 p.m., and we're still on, excuse me, what are we on here? Revenue and receipts. So
we're about a quarter through the document.
Yeah. So, well, we're actually on the last page. I'm sorry. I'll ask that later. Please, go ahead.
Okay. One, stock donations. Each radio station must inform the finance office of the expected donation in advance. Two, the station or unit receiving the stock donation should obtain a DTC for each security and a bank form bearing only the donor's signature, guaranteed by a national bank, trust company, or member firm of the New York Stock Exchange. A request to clarify DTC is in there. Three, if the donor holds stock at a brokerage house, the station or unit must obtain the name and telephone number of the account executive or broker or the broker ID, QSIP number, and number of shares of the securities to be delivered. This information will be submitted to the finance office, who will contact its broker and arrange for the transfer of the securities to the Pacifica account. Each station or unit expecting the stock donation must complete the stock donation form, see attachment.
Okay, are there questions? Again, this is LaVarne. Again, Liney, this is much clearer than when I'd ask about at the beginning. That, you know, if you could just do on some of these things little T accounts to show me exactly what happens and all examples that we can think of, that would help me, because to see, you know, if it goes into the national office or if it's transferred to the station, I mean, it's still. Your line here, each station or unit expecting a stock donation must complete the stock donation form. So, you know, it still isn't real clear to me what exactly the journal entry is to make this happen when it comes back to the station or if it stays in the national office. I mean, in terms of you're saying who receives it, the national office receives the stock, right? Or it's received at the brokerage house, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But do you understand the question I'm asking?
I do. That's what I can do, get you the T account detail, but and then explain it goes. You know, if they got a stock donation number, it goes from
right.
The brokerage house to our brokerage house, and it's direct transfer.
Right. And I understand that the point. Like you said, you the stock is sold when you make a donation. That's what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So the action, so you can't get the T accounts to look at the examples of how this happens in terms of what station or if the national office receives the stock donation. Then.
Yeah. About that, though, what I'm trying to clarify here is that stations don't do this sometimes. They don't get. Some donor says, I pledge 5, 10 shares of XYZ, but station doesn't follow up, doesn't get the necessary information forward, any transfer to actually occur. So I'm trying to put some guidelines here so that we can complete these transactions.
Right. Well, see, this is a very good thing. And as Nia, I like your method there for anyone who's listening in on the call. You know, we certainly invite people to donate stock, and usually that's at the end of the year that usually happens. But that would be, that's something that we certainly would like to receive, and that, you know, we put the policy in place and we can make these things happen quickly, and then there won't be any questions about it.
Terry?
Terry, please.
Yeah, it's clear as to how the paperwork is handled, but it's not clear to me how the station books the income and then it gets transferred and booked
mm-hmm.
at the national office, and
mm-hmm.
you know, how the value is moved around the organization from in its accounting is not clear.
I'll see what I can do.
And that's what he'll do, the T account. You're exactly right. It's not clear. So that's what Line is going to do for us. So that's the action.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions, comments? Shall we move to Central Services?
Central Services, one, every month each radio station submits to the finance office a deposit report detailing deposit information. Two, the controller will I think I should substitute the blues for the blacks here. The controller will review deposit reports and telephone the station bank twice a month to compare the deposit information to the radio station's GL and Memphis reports.
Now, I'd like to stop there.
It's
an important point.
Money?
Yeah, it's an important point because, what happens a lot is you have a station may report pledges of $1 million for a given pledge. When I go to the GL, I don't see $1 million. I see a number above or below that. And when I go to look at the Memphis reports, I see a third number. Then when I go to the bank statement, I see a different number altogether. So this is part of the reconciliation process. And with this kind of guideline, we want to make sure everybody's doing it the same way. Now, why is that the case? Well, what happens is that some of the stations are doing pledges, and that's based on a cash basis, and even then that's 85-90%, and it takes a while to figure out what that fulfillment rate will be. And that is okay, because that is a modified cash methodology. But I don't do modified cash. I do accrual accounting. So I have to accrue income that is not yet come in, but is fully expected based on the history of that fulfillment rate. Then comparing it to the Memphis reports, which is strictly cash, right? Then you want to see the Memphis and the GO and the will not ever reconcile. Memphis is strictly cash, but we do reconcile at the end of the year as part of the audit. Anyway, the point is that I'm wanting to cut back and cut down on the differences that sometimes appear between what stations may report as their income and what's actually been booked in that GO. And that's the monthly process where we get those reconciliations done. What I want to do is put it in a guideline form here so that all the stations are doing it the same way and reconcile the same way. So anyway, sorry, that's what the intent is.
Okay. Go ahead. So this is what we're expecting to do.
Yes.
Okay, so do we need to go through and read the rest of it? Yes or no?
Now, this is fairly new because we were trying now to get tighten up on the accounting for what amounts to lots of money. So we're trying to tighten up the guidelines, have all the stations doing it the same way.
Okay, so
what is the action here? Yeah, Baruti, please. That's good.
I'm trying to see what's going to be the easiest way to handle this. Would it be easier if we just did central service billing cash basis? In other words, if a station collected $1 million, that's it. They got it. They have to provide 19.5% of that, as opposed to dealing with pledges and what percentage of pledges ultimately won't be collected and so forth. I mean, would that mess up your cash flow significantly if we just if we simplified it and said, listen, if you collected $1 million, we want whatever 19.5% of that is $195,000 the first week of the following month. Would that significantly mess up your cash flow?
I would love to have it simple as that, but unfortunately GAAP requires, as you know, under FASB 116, 117, that we book those pledges, so we're stuck with them. We can't go to cash under FASB.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm saying we can book it, but internally. I mean, GAAP wouldn't necessarily require that internally you charge a station based on accrual base. I mean, internally we can set our own policy because, you know, it's not what we're reporting to the public, but I'm just saying from a simplicity point of view, it would be easier for a station to pay based on what they receive, and it'd be easier for you to calculate, I think.
Oh, no, we do that on potential service calculation purposes. We book the monies that the station actually collected. Don't get me wrong, we're not booking on accrual.
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying you were doing it on accrual. You're doing it based on whatever hit the bank account. 19.5% has to be sent to National in the following month.
That's correct. And that's how we do it. Now, in my income statement, as you know, I do a forecast, and I do that on an accrual basis.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
And that's based on pledges, so that's why you can do that.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Comments? Okay. So, shall we move on? So is there any question? So, Lonnie, when you stopped this at the beginning, so what is your action on this? Let me just kind of on the central services.
Well, I think that I'm going to start the process of trying to do a little training for the folks that will be involved in setting up these guidelines on the central services. We have a system, of course. But what we need to now do is go next step and reconcile the GIL, the MIMSIS, the income statement, and the cash so that everybody's using the same methodology. And that's what this is trying to outline. It's what we do, who does it, and how it's reviewed and approved. That's what this is trying to do, set it up that way.
So is there a timeline do you have for like, completion of this?
Well, I'll broach it at the, next month.
Okay, then you'll come up with the timeline.
Yeah.
So they have a finance meeting in July.
Yeah, I'm thinking October 1st. We're all on the same page, but at least people now have in writing a proposal.
Okay. So, but I have another question. We need to somehow. Well, I was thinking of audit. But when you guys meet again, then we can talk about that. We start talking about the next meeting. Okay. Shall we move to disbursements and accounts payable?
Did we finish?
No, we stopped. Wait a minute. I'm on the O sheet. Let me see here. Yeah.
We continue with item 3 of central services.
Did you want to go ahead and finish reading those?
3, at the end of the month, a central services statement by the assistant controller for each radio station representing the unit's allocation of listener support. That's not a complete sentence, but...
Yeah, it's a unit allocation or unit expenses. Based on listener support, it would be more clear.
Hello? Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, you need, like, will be issued or something in there.
Yeah, something like that.
4, a central services statement includes supporting documentation for the amount requested. 5, the CSS is signed by the controller and submitted to the chief financial officer for approval. 6, the chief financial officer reviews and signs off on the CSS and submits it to the accounts payable unit for processing. 7, the accounts payable manager prepares the necessary journal entries and records the transactions in the accounting system. Eight is a question. Should the central services statement for each station also be mailed monthly to the respective general manager or business manager? The answer is that it is currently being done. So 8 could become that the central services statement for each station is mailed monthly to the respective general manager or business manager.
Okay. Lonnie?
Yeah, that's you get a statement. It's a billing, and it's that billing is paid. happens every month, and it's based on what I mentioned before. We're just trying to, you know, keep up the procedures.
Okay.
Just two things.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry.
Rudy?
Just one small item. After, on number four, after you, he states in full central services statement, I would probably add parenthetically CSS, because then right to number five, we start mentioning CSS where we really don't explain what it is.
Gotcha. I'm putting it in now.
And the other thing is, Lonnie, could the, I don't know, I remember last year I was a little surprised to find out that we were behind in central service payment, BAI was.
Yeah.
I know we had discussed, and I don't want to make more work for you, but is that something that maybe treasurers could be in the loop on in terms of central services, the central service situation, you know, without creating extra work for you guys?
Yeah, but, you know, I would love the treasurers to step up a little bit more, because you have access to confidential information like salaries, and you can get the salary information each month. And essential services is another a bit of item that you should be aware of. You know, sometimes stations don't pay their bills. They, for whatever reason, they run out of money. And so they don't pay us first. We're the first group of people that don't get paid. They don't pay essential services, or many times, they, in this case, one station couldn't pay payroll. So I think the treasurer ought to be aware of it. Yes, I'd be happy to work something out.
Okay. And then the other thing is, I don't know if it's dealt with in the manual, but maybe we should also talk about how does the business managers, how do they, what's their responsibilities, and how do they interface with the treasurers?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's something that's in here, but somewhere down the line, I hope we can hash that out so that, you know, we're getting consistent interaction from station to station. You know, everybody's expectations are the same. So,
well, you know, really one suggestion I do have is that finance committee should work on a job description for the treasurers, their privileges, powers, and responsibilities. And I think that might be helpful.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where we could spell out.
Sounds like an action item.
The treasurer should have, mm-hmm. a business manager, the GM, and then what kind of financial information they can legitimately request.
Okay.
LeVar, may I be on the stack, please? It's Nia?
Yes, Nia.
Oh, I thought I heard someone speak before me. No?
Who is next?
I think treasurers, I guess I could speak to BAI, I think treasurers do know what their responsibilities are. I think there's somewhat of a misunderstanding of what the business manager's roles are in terms of their interaction with the treasurer. I think that definitely needs to be spelled out. You know, simple things like, should they be required to go to the finance committee meetings or the local station board meetings? Because a finance committee cannot function without the presence of the business manager, because basically we would just be talking to ourselves. The treasurers are officers of the local station boards, and they know what their responsibilities are. And I do agree with Baruti. I mean, not for the obvious reason, but I do agree that needs to be spelled out in the policies and procedures manual.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting. I think that question came up, what's practice around the network in terms of business managers attending LSB meetings and or finance or budget meetings of the local board, right? And what I found out is that some do and some don't. And some business managers attend the finance local subcommittees, like the finance committee, the budget, but they don't attend the full LSB. The treasurer does that along with the general manager. Now, the question is, what should the rule be? Should we try to make it a rule for everybody doing it the same way? Well, that can be discussed, because some stations are happy doing it the way they're doing it. Now, they would really want to change. So the question is, at what point do you make a rule for everybody? And I tend to think that we ought to, you know, if there's a problem at a station, then we fix it at that station and not try to make a rule for everyone. Otherwise, you just get a lot of opposition. And if it's not broke, let's not try to fix it. But if it is broke, let's address it at the station where it seems to be needing that help. My view is, yes, of course the business managers should and be at least at the finance and the budget meetings for a station, because that's their job. whether or not the business manager should be at every LSB meeting and whether or not the treasurer can do that function is what I was suggesting earlier. It depends on what we want those treasurers to do. If we say a treasurer should be able to present financial information at LSB, that becomes part of the treasurer's responsibility. But if the treasurer doesn't do it, who will? The general manager? The business manager? So we get an answer to that question if we want to by saying, okay, what's going to be the job description for a treasurer in terms of presenting financial information to an LSB?
Carol Wolf, I have to leave the call now. Okay, thank you,
Carol.
Thank you for being on the call. Certainly appreciate yours.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Okay.
I hear LaVarne coughing. Are we ready to proceed with disbursements
and
accounts
payable? Thank you. Can you proceed? And I need to just step away for about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Thank you.
The introduction to the section is as follows. The operating expense categories include programming, development, community event, salaries, central administrative, and general administrative. Invoices are received and processed on a daily basis. They are received by each station unit and in you. The business manager at each radio station or unit prepares the related check requisition. This section outlines the policies and procedures for processing invoices in general, as well as treatment of special items. Policy number one. A check is initiated via check requisition, which must include the following. A, approval of the general manager and department head if applicable. B, approval of the executive director and CFO for non-budget items over $500 if the general manager is interim. C, approval of the executive director and the chief financial officer for contracts over $5,000. D, the original invoice and or receipts, no facsimile copies. E, a copy of the signed contract, if applicable. F, if related to a project, in other words, NTIA, national convention coverage, annual craft event, major donor concert, annual election coverage, remote broadcast, studio and equipment upgrades, move or relocation of facilities. G, date payment required by 5 days prior to the actual due date on the invoice. Phrases such as due upon receipt and ASAP are not acceptable. 2, Pacifica's payment terms are net 30 days. All check requisitions should be submitted to the business office within 10 days of receipt from the vendor. Business office will mail payments within 30 business days of receipt of completed check requisition from the various units. 3, if there is an emergency, please stamp urgent at the top of the check requisition and submit a cover letter explaining why it is an emergency. Failure to submit an invoice timely does not constitute an emergency. 4, invoices not properly supported and completed will be returned with explanation of corrections to be made. 5, the business manager will review and approve all check requisitions. The review should include verification of accuracy regarding the following items: validity of expense as evidenced by supporting documentation, general ledger account code, subaccount code, period to post, amount to be paid, and authorized signatures. Do we need to stop at this point and take questions, or shall I proceed?
Yes, this is me. Lonnie, is that good? We had some questions there for you. You're all good with those, I gather, right?
Yeah, no problem.
Go ahead, Terry.
Okay, legal.
Okay, I'm back.
The executive director.
Just point of privilege. It's 7:15. Nia, do you want to take over for the next 30 minutes or so?
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Legal. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay. I'm noting that in the minutes. Legal. The executive director, CFO, and insurance company must be notified upon notice of a claim. Stations are responsible for legal costs originating at their particular station. The executive director and the CFO must review and approve each legal check requisition. Legal check requisitions and the invoices should be filed together, not by unit, chronologically by vendor.
This is a sore point in this network. Our legal expenses will top $400,000-$600,000. And at present, we don't have a policy around legal. This is the first step in that regard. They, patients cannot hire attorneys and therefore incur that debt, and no one knows about it. That is not good accounting and should not happen. Many times patients may be notified of a claim or a person will indicate to them they're going to sue Pacifica, but patients many times don't notify the ED or the CFO or even the insurance company, and that creates additional liability for the network. And then the patient many times will proceed to hire and pay an attorney, not many times, some, but a couple of examples, and pay an attorney, and no one knows what's going on. So this tries to say that all legal issues should be brought to the attention of the national office and the board, for that matter, and certainly our attorney, and certainly the insurance company. Insurance company is important because if you don't notify an insurance company of a pending claim in a timely way, you void your insurance, like voiding your warranty on your car. That means we can't get any money out of the insurance company, that we end up paying the full freight, which we would not like to do. So that's what this is about. It's short, but we have some additional policies we have in place at Finance Committee that we're now doing monthly reports on legal, so if we can stay abreast of what legal expenses are accumulating.
Lonnie? Is that
Yes, Lamarno.
Do you think you add those to this? Because all it says here is the executive director of CFO and insurance company. It doesn't say anything about the Pacifica attorney. And what you just mentioned, other policies that are being worked on?
Yeah, we have a policy that does do cover, but I can make it, I can put those in here if I can just dig them out, just scatter it a little bit around our policy of the various motions been passed by the board. I will add the ones that I'm aware of, certainly the ones that we've done at Finance.
Okay. LaVarne, you wanted to?
Yes. Perhaps in the language in this, Lonnie, perhaps we should actually state the point that in terms of the insurance could become null and void, and that the reason for doing this, and that something about how the legal issues are managed by the have to be managed by the national office or the executive director. Because I think that's where we have had issues.
Yeah.
So some change in the language to really state, you know, what the liability is here if things are not done, if the insurance company and the executive director and CFO are not notified.
Yeah, I made some notes as you were talking.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Does anybody else have a comment? Okay. Terry, health benefits?
Health benefits. The assistant controller is responsible for enrolling all employees in the appropriate insurance plans and maintains a current record of union and non-union employees enrolled. The CFO reviews and approves all health benefit requisitions prepared by the accounts payable department prior to payment. Any discrepancies noted must be adjusted and properly documented by the controller to ensure the amount paid is correct and in accordance with the appropriate benefit plan. The assistant controller maintains processed health benefit requisitions.
Any comments from Lonnie? Had none. Audit had none for him.
Yeah, this is important because now we have union people enrolled in our health benefit plans. And if a person, for example, you know, needs to see a doctor or take an ambulance, so timely enrollment is critical for employees. So this is making the point that we have a person now that we've identified as in charge of that. So if I come on board and maybe I need an ambulance in my first 30 days, but if I'm not enrolled in a timely way, it won't be covered, and that employee ends up with a big, huge ambulance bill of $2,500. Same thing would be with dental and other kinds of benefits. So we now have we want to have one person in charge of that to make sure that these people are enrolled timely and done, and so that there's no gaps in coverage. That's why it's in here.
Okay. Terry, go ahead.
Central Administrative Services, see the Revenue and Receipts chapter. Stringers. Stringers are freelance reporters, domestic and foreign, occasionally utilized by the network. All units receiving these check requisitions, which must include the Social Security number of the reported amount and scope of work performed.
Okay, here, Lonnie?
Yeah, this is right now, different stations do different things. Some people hire people as stringers, some people hire independent contractors, some people hire them as sort of hourlies or temporary people. And the definition of what is a consultant, an independent contractor, or a stringer needs to be clarified. And I will work with the stations to see if we can come up with something in this area. Right now, I just don't have. But what I'm saying here is that they must. Sometimes they'll say Mary Jones needs to be paid for a report that she did in Iraq, and there'll be expenses attached. But there's no Social Security number. There's no scope of work identified. So the person might call up directly and say, I was never paid. And I'm trying to just get to some basic information that should be with every invoice for these stringers.